It's KOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for tuning in. We're on Twitter at KOW. Seattle is over. We've ruined it. We turned a soulful city into a pig trough of corporate greed and designer label hype. That complaint is 25 years old. There was a movie about it. How the local music, quote-unquote, scene became the Seattle grunge scene. Was it a scene?
If you say the word scene, everybody rolls their eyes and laughs at you. It's scene. You know, there's no scene. So a lot of people thought that it has reached its peak, and by next year, we were all going to go back to doing what we were doing, and we were all going to go back to our little small-town utopia.
That's from the 1997 documentary Hype. It was about Seattle rock bands and their go-round with fame and greed. The filmmaker Doug Prey is re-releasing the movie this week. Welcome, Doug.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
A wonderful part of that movie involved the now CEO of Sub Pop Records, Megan Jasper. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks for having me.
Megan, is Seattle more absurd now than in 1992?
I would say it's absurd, but just in different ways.
How's that?
Well, I mean, we have like 5 million cranes up in the sky and all sorts of weirdness all around us all the time. It's just different. I think we've grown quite a bit, and we've grown in a lot of ways, good and bad.
Yeah, I want to talk about those. Doug, you are not a Seattleite. You came back here to add a section to your original movie. What struck you about Seattle then and now?
Well, at the time, it was the whole story was how does it small, undiscovered, authentic, amazing underground scene get discovered and labeled and blown out to the entire world. That's what the movie's about. So it was always such an amazingly vibrant scene then in the mid-80s and the early, I mean, it really, really was. And I think my movie kind of talks about how the grunge label was applied to that and the kind of things just sort of got defined in a way that almost hurt the scene, or a lot of people were whining about it, complaining about it. But I look today and I visited Seattle a number of times and I'm here now and I just see as much vibrance in the actual music community. So regardless of what's being labeled or how it's being hyped or sold or anything else, I see still Seattle being just one of the most vibrant music communities I've ever witnessed to this day. It's still just so many bands, so much music.
Well, that's interesting because I've heard so many people say the unaffordability and the changed culture of Seattle has stifled the vibrancy of artists of all kinds. You're finding that's not true?
I can't argue against that complaint. I've definitely heard a lot of that. And I see that. I mean, economically, you know, I'm not speaking economically. I'm talking about the amount of talent and the amount, the richness of the bands and the interconnectivity and the way that there has been a community.
But the rising prices and gentrification hasn't scattered that talent?
Well, I mean, I interviewed like Jack and Dino recently, who was one of the producers for a lot of those great records and still is. And, you know, there's just this widespread feeling that they're being pushed out. You know, they have to go out more into the warehouse districts or out into the suburbs or somewhere else. So, no, I want to be clear. I'm not trying to say that it's not being threatened by economic realities, but those musicians are still there. A lot of them are still playing, and I'm still very impressed by just kind of the vibrancy of the music scene from as an outsider.
I think it's every bit as vibrant and even more than it ever has been. And for sure, it is not the easiest place for artists to live.
In the city itself, but what's the effect of, I mean, it's not like the artists were all ever from Seattle proper,
right.
But what about the unaffordability of the core? Does it matter to the music?
I don't think it matters to the music. I think we have great artists making great music.
Of course, you are now the head of a record label.
Yes, and we work with a lot of amazing local musicians. Whether they can afford to live in Seattle is the issue, but there are so many musicians here right now doing incredible things.
That's the money. What about the culture? How do you? What's the Amazon effect to you, if any?
Well, the Amazon effect to me is the affordability factor. It's
not tech bros and there goes the gayborhood and right?
There's a little bit of that, but there are other neighborhoods that are still exciting and super artist friendly, and there are a lot of amazing neighborhood stewards who want to make sure that there are room for artists. That's why you have pockets like Georgetown that are really exciting right now, or South Park, or West Seattle, White Center. We have still some artists who are leaving and going to Tacoma or LA, or, you know, leaving Seattle. But there's still a lot of amazing things that are happening right in Seattle.
I guess the question is, if the money, the Amazonification of the city, if you will, if that is actually leading to more crowds who might go to clubs. And I think that's a question I certainly can't answer, but that's something that a lot of the people I've been speaking to keep bringing up. It's like, you know, it could be a positive thing. It's like, hey, there's a lot more listeners out there. There's a lot more people going to clubs. I mean, I was just on Capitol Hill the other night, and it felt like a lot was happening. But again, I, you know, as a tourist almost.
Well, do you bring that same scoffing to national publications? Let's talk about the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Can you tell the story one more time about how I just loved you for this? I remember it so well. 1992, you punked the New York Times for being a part of the stupidity of the whole hype. So how did that go down?
Well, the New York Times called Sub Pop and actually wanted to talk to Jonathan. And Jonathan, whether he was in a meeting or whatever, was like, you should actually talk to Megan. And so
you were a receptionist? Or
I had been a receptionist, but I was laid off, and I was doing music distribution for Caroline Records. Uh-huh. And I was bored, and I had a ton of coffee that morning. Mm-hmm. So I was like, and the reporter called up and said, hey, we're doing this massive piece on Seattle culture and grunge and, you know, the fashion and the culture and the music.
This is when flannel was big. Flannel was on people's Christmas lists and whatnot.
I know. I almost wore it today.
Yeah,
celebration.
Thank you. Mm.
But so I chatted with the reporter, and he said, we actually want to also include a lexicon of grunge. And I thought, there's a lexicon of grunge? And I said, oh, yeah? And he said, well, you know, can you share some of the words that are used? And I just thought, And so I said, well, you give me a word, and I'll give you the grunge translation, because I needed a little bit of time to think of something.
Mm.
And so I started jotting a bunch of crap down, and he would give me a word like a date, and I forget what it was. I think it was a tuna platter or something like that. And so I just started kind of having fun, and I kept thinking that we would end up having the super hearty laugh.
Like, hang, I'm from the New York Times, Megan. Like, how do you grungers say hanging out?
Hanging on the flippity fling flong, or, you know, whatever it was.
It was actually swinging on the flippity flop. Yeah.
See, you're...
I remember everything about it. It's like there were t-shirts that said lame stain, because they asked you, like, what's a jerk, you know, or something like that. And you said, we call that a lame stain.
Tom Tom Club was an outsider.
An outsider, yeah. So my question is, that sense of humor, does it still exist in a time when those neighborhoods you mentioned, Georgetown and South Park, I can read about the newest hot restaurant there in the New York Times. You know, we have blown up in a somewhat similar sense. So what's it like now?
Well, I actually think it's a lot of the same stuff. I think that, yes, we change in a lot of ways, and a lot of those ways are incredibly challenging, whether it's with traffic or affordability. But we also change in great ways. We always continue to evolve. And in that way, we have created these amazing resources available for artists. And I do think that humor is a huge part of just our basic culture anyways.
And I don't see any reduction in the amount of what I would call sort of a wonderfully self-deprecating sense of humor among musicians and artists around here. I mean,
really?
I do think there is a character. I mean, I think different regions in the country do have different characters. I really do believe that. And I don't. What was so crazy about the early 90s was that it sort of took on this dark tone and
it was like this
brooding angst. And for sure, there was music being made that was brooding and angsty. But that said, what attracted me to the community in the first place was that they weren't taking themselves seriously. And so to have the whole world take it very seriously was the rub. That's where things just got strange. And I don't think that went away. I think what happened is the grunge fad finally, like all fads, like, if I can call it a fad, it finally dissipated and things moved on. But look at bands. I mean, just to name one, the President of the United States of America came out, like a year after the sort of the peaking of grunge.
They were poppy funny, but they weren't nihilistic funny. It was like,
different.
Life is sludge and so is my noise. That was the kind of, like, I'm sick. It was a bemused nihilism.
Yes. I will say, though, we still sell a lot of shirts that say loser on them.
We sell a lot of shirts.
Yeah. And we still wear them.
By the way, Megan, what would your 1980s Mohawk wearing self think of Megan, the record label CEO who moves a lot of product?
Well, I would say if someone told me when I was a kid that I was going to end up working at a record label for pretty much my entire adult life, I would have like high-fived myself and just gone, oh my God.
Okay.
I'm so psyched that I actually get to work with musicians and not just musicians, but great artists, you know, that we can take their music and the art that they make and put it out into the world and hopefully get some incredible thoughts and messages out there.
Shabazz Palaces.
Yeah.
Fleet Foxes.
Father John Misty. So many.
Because we're about out of time, Doug, if the music industry latched on to, I'll ask both of you, Seattle again in a big way, what would that Seattle sound be?
I don't think that'll ever happen again.
Yeah.
I really think the internet and many other things shifted right after. I think that was the last globally known local music scene that will be celebrated in that way. And it doesn't mean there was any less music in the world, but I really think that was rare.
Sound right?
Sounds right. I would also say, though, if the sound of Seattle right now is horns honking.
That's the scene.
Yeah.
Megan Jasper, president of Sub Pop Records, Doug Prey, documentary filmmaker. The documentary Hype came out 20 years ago, and it's playing at the Egyptian Theater today at 7 p.m. this evening.
Yeah, 7 p.m.
With a coda or an opening. You did some extra interviews for it.
Actually, that was a short film I made that is going on the new Blu-ray DVD release. It's a bonus features, but it's called Hype 20 years after, and that's on the actual DVD.
Well, it's been a bonus having you both. It has not been a bummer, which I believe you called the realm. What was it like?
Harsh realm.
A harsh realm. It's not been a harsh realm harsh talking realm. To you on the Flippity Flop. Thanks
to
you both.
It has not been a harsh realm being here. Thanks for having us.
KUOW, I'm Bill Radke. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Catch him a thief every day on TV. Well, we're not out to make a real big splash, but they wouldn't mind a record and a little hard cash. Now, I never knew I was a young, fresh fellow before.